Welcome to Home Education Matters, the weekly podcast supporting you on your home education journey.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Home Education Matters. And today I am joined by Andrea Gadsby from Hope Tuition Clinic. And we are going to be discussing English literature. So this is primarily Key Stage 4, exam time, GCSE, IGCSE, all of that kind of jazz. And Andrea joined us for a really fun podcast that we did last year, which was on going from teaching to tuition. And I'll tell you an interesting fact, which is that when Andrea and I first recorded our podcast last year, we were actually doing an English podcast. So we got ourselves all set up and I did the introduction. I was like, oh, you know, Andrea's here and we're going to be talking about English. And within about 10 minutes or so, it was clear that the conversation was going a really different way and a really interesting way. So what Andrea and I did after about 20 minutes of chatting, we said to each other, we said, should we just make this about tuition and going from teaching to tuition? And so we did, we like pivoted to a completely different podcast. And then at the end, I re-recorded the beginning saying, we're doing a podcast on teaching to tuition. So there you are, a little behind the scenes of how the podcast works or fails to work, or maybe it's just super flexible. But today I thought we would come back and we would do that English podcast that we never got to do. So we are looking at English literature today. But for anyone who is doing English language, which is the not exactly compulsory one, but it's the one that is along with maths is quite important if you want to get particular jobs or funding at university and stuff. We have got a podcast on English language looking at Cambridge, and Andrea may well come back on at some point to guide us through the EdXL English language. But today we are just doing English literature. And so first of all, Andrea, hello, and thanks so much for coming on again. And do tell our listeners, anyone who hasn't listened to the previous podcast, a little bit about yourself.
It's Eleanor. Yeah, it's lovely to be on. And actually, it did remind me of the fun chat we had last time. So that's why I was really looking forward to sort of having another chat. Well, my name is Andrea Gadsby. I've got 20 years of teaching and curriculum leadership experience within English, both teacher training all the way through to A-level. And about 3 years ago, I made the leap to moving on to online. It was COVID really that sort of started it. And since then, I've been tutoring mostly GCSE and A-level students through, in addition to their schoolwork, but also I have got a lot more home educated students and international students, so it's a real mixture. And so that means that I have to know and teach everything from IGCSEs, A levels, through to sort of domestic GCSE. And there are, that does put me well placed to sort of see the crossovers between them, as well as the differences. And I also really love teaching my little Key Stage 3 group that I've got with year 8s and 9s in, that I love, because it just allows me to break off a little bit and plan some really super activities for them. So that's what I do. And then the other side of my company is working as a consultant in schools for newly qualified teachers, making sure that they're getting all their entitlements. And I work for a big national trust doing that. So I still get to be in schools and see the cutting edge of teaching and learning, as well as being able to do my own thing online. So yeah. I like it. It's to both worlds.
All right, nice. And like, I don't want to veer off too much as we did last time. But in one line, could you answer a question for me? Last time we had our podcast, we were talking about going from teaching to tuition, and you said a few things that made it clear that teaching was in a pretty tricky time at the moment. You know, after COVID, a lot of teachers finding it difficult. So in one line, are you able to tell us, has it got better, worse, or stayed the same?
In some respects, better, certainly more rigorous. The entry into teaching has got a lot more research and educational research and cognitive science backed within it. And it's a better framework going into teaching than when I did it. Worse in some respects, that the workload and just the sustainability of the job is really hard. Energy wise, new entrants, and as well as, we know, experienced teachers find it tough. But it is getting better. Teachers, leaders and schools and trusts are starting to pivot away from, you know, the really rigid school day and allowing some teachers, if they start later in the day because they've got a planning period, they can take that at home, they can finish early. So I do think that trusts are working out how they can look after the well-being and offer a little bit of flexibility to what is traditionally a really inflexible profession. And there are so many things and resources online and people doing actually now some great things within teaching, far more rigorous and brilliant, really, based on how we learn, far better than the shooting in the dark that happened when I was started. So it's getting there. It's still, let's say, very demanding. And I think we just need to get underneath that and make the job, you know, a little bit more doable. But I'm always blown away by some of the newly qualified teachers I see coming into the job with lots of energy. So, yeah, it's getting there.
It's a little bit like home educators, in as much as we're doing a series where we follow a new home educator. It's called A Journey into Home Education. And we're on month 6 at the moment. And it's really fascinating watching a home educator go from being like very early days, everything's planned out, lots of folders, you know, like timetables. And then we're on month 6 and suddenly the child is doing their own project. They're doing like a YouTube channel. And it's really interesting to see that change. And I really feel like they should do a series where they follow like a handful of teachers over the first 5 years of their teaching and see these beautiful bunny rabbit sort of like bright-eyed teachers. And then like in 5 years time, see if they're still so enthusiastic and enthused.
I think there is certainly, when you start any journey, it's going to change, isn't it, as you move along through it. I just always, one of the things that I, when I go into schools, is just say we want to try and keep you in the profession, you know, as much as possible. So that's kind of one of the key things that we want to do, is them not to sort of disappear after a couple of years, because it is tough. And you know, the children are finding it tougher as well, and so I've got a lot more that are leaving mainstream education, because it is tough. Schools are tough places to be for young people as well as teachers. So it's, yeah, we're just going to have to watch and wait and see how this all pans out.
Yeah, and apologies for yet again making the home education podcast about teaching. It's only brief, I promise. It's only the start of it. It's just because I think as a home educator, I do find the like kind of like the other world, the world we're not in, you know, the school and the teachers, kind of weirdly fascinating in a kind of way that you would, I don't know, that like it's so other to me. Even though I obviously was a teacher very briefly, it feels so other to me that there's this whole world of children going to school like 9 to 3, that teachers are there, like desks and blackboards, and I just find the whole thing really surreal. And so I think every now and then when I get a teacher like you on, a tutor like you on, I can't help but kind of be like, is it really, like, it's a bit like the dark side. I'm like, what is even going on over there? But anyway, I promise I won't drift on anymore about this, because this is my own personal curiosity getting the better of me. So English literature. Now, English literature is one of those subjects where there are so many options. You know, there's GCSE, there's IGCSE, there's pretty much every exam board, I think, does English literature. It's a smorgasbord of stuff to choose from. So, yeah. Andrea, first of all, could you perhaps guide us through the main options that there are available to us?
Unlike English language, English literature follows a fairly steady route whether you do the domestic GCSE or you do the IGCSE, because the Joint Qualifications Authority have a, and the national curriculum has a certain element of different literature texts that you have to study. So they are usually the big four, which would be Shakespeare, poetry, drama, and a prose. And to sort of get around that, they are sort of organised within the curriculum in different ways and examined in different ways. But anybody who's wanting to study English literature, any parents who are thinking about that, need to be aware of that kind of four-part element of it, of any kind of literature avenue that you go down.
Sorry, is that in all of the exams?
Most of them, yes. So there might be some that are just extract-based, but there is definitely usually a form of Shakespeare, a form of prose, like a novel text, some poetry, and then sometimes there is a modern drama, but sometimes the drama can be picked up through the Shakespeare. So you would really have at least one of the three main types of forms of literature: a drama, some poetry, and a novel. Obviously with English language it's different. There's extracts and there's reading extracts that are both non-fiction and fiction, but the literature is whole texts. From my experience of teaching the IGCSE, a lot of it is there's more options with the types of questions that you can try, and some of them really tap into an extract based question a lot more than the domestic GCSE, which sometimes eases the load of answering the question. So you might just really have to comment on particular extract, you might have to link it to the rest of the novel, but it's heavily extract based, which I think for home educators is probably is a lot easier for them to study rather than a whole text, which when you get to GCSE often needs a tutor to guide you through it.
Do you know what extract it's going to be before you get into the exam? So it could be anything from anywhere in the book.
It is, and obviously you have, and that's because they want you to have read the whole text, so it's not just an extract. But for the prose texts, there's always an extract. For the older the Shakespeare, or if you do a pre-19th century text, which you have to do for the domestic GCSE, that doesn't necessarily happen in the IGCSE. In the IGCSE, there can be modern texts, which might be more palatable for home educators wanting to do that. The domestic GCSE is much thicker and much more bound by specific types of texts that you might want to do that are pre-1900, which can be quite tricky.
Just to ask you about that. So with the IGCSE, are there more global texts on it or not?
Yes, very much so. And more modern options. So I've taught spies at IGCSE. I've also taught, I'm forgetting it now, but it was set in South Africa. And so I've taught a book there. So you do get more of an international flavour to the text that you want to choose, just because I think of the audience of students that will be following it. And so the text choices tend to be less what I call written by pale, male and stale authors that are, you know, very British based and usually dead. So there's a lot more currency, I think, in the IGCSE, and the domestic GCSE, having said that, is changing. There's a whole new raft of poems and novels coming in that are more culturally diverse and massively welcomed and needed. So that's probably happening in the next couple of years. So there is an option for those, if anybody's listening, that they've got younger children who are being home educated at the minute, sort of, maybe they're 11, 12, 13. The domestic GCSE literature is going to change to have more diverse texts in. So it's worth looking out for that if that was something that you wanted to do.
Do the texts change every year? I know absolutely nothing about English lit. I mean, is it such that you have one syllabus, you know, because normally exam boards keep the same syllabus, depending on the exam board, for like 4 or 5 years or something like that. And then they have like random change for very little reason. But that's harsh. They're trying to make it more up to date for whatever reason. And is it that with English literature, if it's like the 2019 syllabus you're following, for example, is it always the same texts, or do the texts change every single year?
Stay the same for the life of that, for the iteration of that syllabus. Now, this one, for example, the domestic GCSE, and I think a lot of the IGCSE has been running since about 2015, and that iteration of that curriculum is still running now. Obviously, we've had the big break in COVID, which has probably seen this iteration of the curriculum longer, perhaps, than maybe previous ones. But that obviously is helpful for teachers. Because obviously, if you think about it, you've got a 2-year course for GCSE that for the majority of students if they're based in school. So you often need to get a cohort done of a new. So you need to do 2 years and get a cohort done of a new syllabus before you then think, OK, right, I get where, you know, and have a look at the exam questions. So I get where we're going now. So to have a curriculum and, you know, specification that lasts about 7 years is good, because actually you're only going to get through about 3 cohorts. School in that time.
It's actually nice for home educators as well, because there's a lot of resources, there's exam papers. It's really, so the GCSE, you mentioned that is changing syllabus. So when is that changing? When is the last time that they'll be doing the 2015 one?
I think it's 2026. Okay. But it might then, it's all sort of still in consultation stage. And I think up until then, it's optional that people can start to feed it in. So it's not the whole syllabus that's changing. It's just elements like the prose texts, the novels will be more diverse that you can choose from. The poetry will be more diverse. So the format of the papers and the syllabus will not change. It's just that the text choices will. It'll be the same with IGCSE. There will be probably some text updates every few years, but in terms of the syllabus at the minute, there's no root and branch change like there was in 2015. It's still fundamentally, as far as I know, certainly because there's not been any changes in English language, there are talks about changing certain elements of it, but at the minute, no. It'll just be the texts that change. The focus of the exams will stay the same.
Okay, so let's have a look first at the IGCSEs. So I'm guessing Cambridge does an English literature. I'm guessing EdXL does an IGCSE. Are there any other boards that do an IGCSE?
Oh, AQA.
Do they?
I think they have done in the past. Whether they still do, I don't know. Because they sort of bring a lot of their domestic over. But the main ones that people do are EdXL. Or, to be honest, Cambridge is the one that I've taught the most. Okay. Just purely because it's quite friendly. As I said, a lot of it's extract-based. And you can pick an extract question or a whole novel question historically.
So you can choose. There's more choice.
There is far more choice, I would say, in the IGCSE than the domestic GCSE. And so because of that, students can perhaps play to their strengths. And I can see why, because you've got people taking it in very, very different settings compared to the more narrow and predictable setting of the domestic GCSE. So the questions have to reflect that there are home educators who are taking it, as well as people in international schools. So I think they have to reflect that in the options that they give students. There's usually an extract for a novel, and then the choice of a whole novel question. And then you've usually given some poems that you have to compare, that you will have to know. There's still a booklet, an anthology of poems, usually anywhere between 10 and 15. For both domestic and the IGCSE, and there's comparison questions based on that.
So there's an anthology of poems, and then you need to do a Shakespeare play, I'm guessing.
And there will be a list for that, that the whoever is teaching it can pick from. Same with the poems, but usually with poems, there's usually flavours of anthologies, like time and place, conflict, whatever they are, and they're all kind of a little bit of a bunch of those. There's usually an element of an unseen poem in some instances, but I think a lot of it might depend on the type, you know, because sometimes you might have for example, an A strand of a syllabus or a B strand. So I think it's really worth, I'd always say to parents, have a really good look at the nitty gritty of what the syllabus is asking for, because it will vary between different iterations of an A or a B option. Certainly that's the case with the English language. So then obviously with the Shakespeare, there's the poetry, there's the novel, and they are all essay-based responses that are sort of set, you know, usually between 45 minutes and an hour.
Per question?
Per question, yes.
So I'm guessing there's not that many questions on the paper then?
No, it's not like the English language that has sort of like reading sections and then writing sections. It's a very, very simple paper. Probably more, if the parents sort of are listening, probably more traditional to what they would remember opening up, you know, an essay question with an extract. The only problem is, even though it's a simple paper, because there's lots and lots of choice, you might have a booklet of, say, five Shakespeare extracts, or a Shakespeare question, but you're only, you know, sort of doing Romeo and Juliet. So you have to filter through them. So in terms of the look of the paper, it can look a lot more dense than it actually is. You only need to sort of look at maybe one or two questions on the paper. So it's certain things like that. It's being able to have a look at the papers online, navigate them, sort of making sure that your child is aware that they might, you know, get hold of a big paper and it's a booklet, and they did so that they don't panic, because I've had students before do a question on the wrong play because they've just not really realized that they need to flick through it to find their play. So I think making them aware of you know, format of the paper, what it looks like, so they feel comfortable, they kind of have got an idea of what they're getting when they open it. And at this stage with year 11s, I'm very much going through the wording of the question. So even though the question, you can't predict the extract or whether it'll be a question focusing on, you know, the relationship between Lady Macbeth and Macbeth, or is it about sort of parent-child relationships in Romeo and Juliet? You don't know what you're going to get, but the wording of the question never changes. And so you can actually help students to become comfortable, as I'm doing with my year 11s now, the 16-year-olds, by making them aware of the wordings of the questions, so that you know the format of the paper before you sit down and do it. And I'm doing that at the moment with a 16-year-old who's doing the IGCSE English language. We're looking at, right, we know which ones out of all the options, which one are you going to choose? Now let's just focus on that in the lead up to the exam. So I think it's well worth knowing the papers, focusing on which areas. So there's always going to be a question on a character, right? I'm definitely going to focus on that, and making sure that as much as you can sort of be a little smarter with your revision and what you study. And I think that comes from knowing the examination syllabus and the examination format well. And that's something that parents can really get on board with and look at themselves. Obviously, the content's really difficult when you get to year 11 to actually be able to teach them. Sometimes you need to outsource that. But certainly the content of the paper you can break down and help make decisions on which ones they follow and how they become comfortable with it.
So Cambridge, I know that they have quite specific use of, I can't remember, it's not keywords, but it's like command words, right?
Yeah.
They have quite, in other subjects, they have quite specific command words in questions. Is that the case? You kind of hinted that it was a little bit, but my memory of English literature isn't that there's like multiple command word questions.
All right, there aren't really. I mean, it's just making sure that you know the difference between discuss and explore and compare. They will open with sort of their own version of that. I mean, essentially, the questions are asking very, very similar things. Like I said, there's not a huge difference between what you're being asked to do when you write a literature essay for the domestic GCSE and the skills you need for the IGCSE. It's a literature an analytical essay. However, it helps students to know that if it says, you know, explore the relationship between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, starting with this, you know, starting with this extract, or it might just be a full essay question, that can help them, because you can then start to make up your own, which I'm doing with some of my students. So here's a section that we've read. What do you think would be a really good theme or character? Right, let's write a question. So they become familiar with the wording of the question. But in terms of, it's not like science, say, for example, that have just banks and banks of command words that you've got to be able to differentiate between.
Mm. And I get the impression that as you're talking, I get the impression that not only are there lots of options for exams, you know, GCSE, IGCSE, all the different exam boards, but within each exam, there's also lots of options of which text you study, which questions you choose. So there's a huge amount of options. So for our parents listening, right, if you were to take the IGCSE and you've got the EdExcel and the Cambridge, let's just focus on those two. Is there anything that's startlingly different between them that you'd be like, well, you know what, most people like the Cambridge because of X, or most people like the EdExcel? You know, if you like poetry, for example, choose one or the other. Is there anything you can point to in that way?
It would not particularly, just because, as I said, that the format of literature is really centered around drama, poetry, prose. The only difference might be that some might be more extract based and they offer you an extract. Sometimes it might just be an essay question. And I think it's about finding the balance about what is going to be the best for you. And actually the text choices as well that are on there. Looking at, do I like that? Oh, I really like that text. I really think my son or daughter will like that. And picking the text, even if it's an obscure one, if you get a good tutor, because obviously, like myself, I've not read every text in the English language. So I, you know,
shame,
a good,
shame on you.
Which is why I always get really excited when someone says, what do you mean Hamlet? I'm going, yes, I don't do that one very often. I love it. But a good, you know, that's what you have a good tutor for. A good qualified tutor with experience will be able to read any text, look at the mark scheme, and be able to plan activities around it. Even if it's an obscure one, obviously there are less resources, but then it's finding the right tutor that can sort of teach that for you. But I think a lot of it is Definitely text choice. Some of the texts on the domestic GCSE are quite dry and they don't necessarily like them so much. The poems are great, but as I said, because they have a pre-1900 text that they have to do, prose text, a lot of them really struggle with it. And so because that is really something that you can escape on the IGCSE, there are far more options that you can pick. And then so it might be going with that, because in all honesty, the questions don't vary a huge amount. So make sure that your child is reading the text. Actually, they don't mind rereading. They don't mind going over as much as possible.
Yeah, makes a big difference, doesn't it? And so with the IGCSE and the GCSE, you choose basically one novel from the list of novels, one Shakespeare play from the list of Shakespeare plays, one anthology from the list of anthologies, and a drama.
Perhaps it will depend. That's definitely the domestic GCSE. I think the IGCSE managed to move that because they still tick the drama box with the Shakespeare. So I think it is just, again, it's about having a really good look at what the format of the literature looks like. And you can, with all boards, they always have a lot of parents will be familiar with the exam board websites more than domestic GCSE parents, but you'll know that there's like the specification at a glance. And so you can look at, okay, well, what is the percentage of the examination here? What's the length of it? What kind? And then you can always go down and look at, I would always say, even as a teacher and an examiner, the first thing I do when somebody comes on, a home education student says, I'm doing this particular board, first thing I do is I will go to an exam paper, because there's no point in me teaching something if I don't know, right, they've got to write an essay question on that. Let me look at the mark scheme. And then I go, yes, know what it is. And that's particularly important for A-level, where the home education students that I've got for A-level are doing vastly different boards with different focuses on, you know, the weightings of their texts. So it's really important. And again, with parents wanting to know how, when it gets to this level of study, how they can help is to know the exam boards and to try and make that really informed decision to be able to sort of hold them up together and go, oh, that one's a bit dry, I don't think they'll like that, and have those conversations with your, you know, with your 14, 15 year old, because you can, you know, you can start it obviously whenever you like. If you've got somebody who's really bright and really into reading these books, get going with it. You know, there's, you know, sort of, if they want to sit it early, they can sit it early. There's no, obviously, it doesn't necessarily have to take 2 years, because you can read something and do it in your own time and talk about a program with a tutor. And then the tutor can, you know, let you know if they think they'll be ready to sit it at a particular time at a centre. So there's lots of freedom when you're studying a text with how you do it and when. They just got to be prepared to be able to make sure that once they've chosen a syllabus and they're happy with it and they've chosen a text, they get the right tutor, and that they have to make sure that there is the opportunity for them. They will have to sit and practice writing essays. That's kind of the main outcome that they'll have to be schooled in. So that's really important. It's about making sure that the skills are right, that the tutor's teaching them essay writing skills if they haven't had it at sort of in that kind of key stage three sort of area, and then they get the right board and the right texts. And then
that's really interesting, because I've done podcasts on a lot of different subjects, and some of the subjects, basically, it makes no difference which exam board you choose, you know, like they're all going to be covering, but like the sciences, maths, it's pretty much almost identical between them. But it sounds like English lit in particular, and also English language as well, that they're much more like history or geography, where there's really quite stark changes between them. So there is no shortcut here for parents looking through the exam boards, looking through the specifications, looking through the choices of novels, and sitting there with their child and saying, okay, like, are you more likely to be interested in this novel? Are you more likely to be interested in this play? So give us a flavour of the sort of novels that they can choose from for IGCSE. What sort of things are we talking here?
They're all 20th century usually, which is great. And as I've said, there's a real list of, I'm still trying to remember the one that I did that was set in Africa, and it'll come to me probably after the podcast, but they are all multicultural ones. Some of them are, they're not always English, which is nice. We've had a separate piece, which is an American one. There was Spies, by Michael Frayn, which was a tough, that was a tough, tough one to teach, that one. And there's the South African one that I've taught that I can't remember off the top of my head.
That's not Jonathan Coetzee, not one of his, no. He's the only South African author I know.
I know who you mean, no. That's, and what the thing is, they're not usually too huge either. So they're probably just like an average size. You don't have to read like War and Peace or Hard Times or anything. They're usually quite modern, diverse novels. And I think sometimes it's looking at, again, what that flavour is depending on the board, because that they might have some that cross over, but with the IGCSE, they might not to the same extent. With the domestic GCSE that I know really well, the choice of texts is fairly slim. In terms of, there's plenty of them, but what tends to happen is schools tend to choose one or two because they've taught them before historically and they've been recycled and put into a new specification. And that might be the case with some of the IGCSEs. Some do carry over, some don't. And so sometimes they can be ones that tutors or teachers feel the most confident with teaching. However, having said that, when you're a home ed, when you home educate somebody, it's got to have that conversation with a tutor. And if you've got a good tutor, that's the whole point. You don't want to pigeonhole. That's not what students want to do. They don't want to say, oh, well, we'll do this one because I've done it. And really, that gives you that freedom. Choose one of these rich texts that you might want, you know, that you might want to be able to study, that you like. And parents can get involved by, you know, sort of reading the reviews. You can go on sort of on Amazon and have a look together and work out, oh, I quite like that. And parents can read it with their children as well and discuss it. And I've had parents do that when we've been looking at dramas, and they've sort of read it with them and they've loved the endings. And sometimes then I've had parents come talk to me at the start of a session, you know, and they've gone, oh, we've really loved it. I didn't think that would happen at the end. And sometimes then I've said to parents, maybe discuss this with them over dinner and help them to get involved in a way that's not technical as such, but actually gets them still discussing themes and ideas within the story. So I think with literature, again, unlike maths and science, parents can actually be really heavily involved, not maybe in the practical and the sort of the skills aspects of it, but reading the text, discussing the texts with them, because they are quite adult. And I think, you know, I think it's something that can really help parents and teenagers sort of bond over something. And, you know, you can even then go and visit maybe where this person might have, you know, an area, you know, part of the text that it's studied in, set in, you might go there. There could be something that's, you know, related to a theme or an idea that's related that you can go and visit. So I think the possibilities with English Lit are really wide and integrative, I think, for parents and children.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Others.
And I think that I know that when my children, neither of my children chose to do English Lit, although I think my daughter would actually have really liked it, but it just felt like a bit too much work, frankly. So we went for other options. But I know that when they were younger, a lot of our English literature skills were discussion based. You know, so we would watch, for example, a lot of the BBC have done great adaptations of Dickens, you know, very long ones. They did a Bleak House with the woman from the X-Files. Yeah. And yes. It was like 12 hours long or something. There were so many episodes. And my children absolutely loved it. We've watched it like three times. And we would talk about all the characters and like, what do you think the places are? How do the places relate to the plot? And what about the use of lighting? And isn't it interesting the clothes they chose for the different characters? And these are all the kind of skills that you need, right, when you're analysing text. And so a lot of that was discursive based. So before I ask you about the kind of skills that you're mentioning when it comes to writing essays, I want to have a look at the GCSEs. So when it comes to the GCSEs, I'm guessing it is EdExcel and AQA are the main ones, are they?
Yes, there's OCR and there's Educast. They're the four. Yeah. But in terms of the main resources that are out there, it's sort of EdExcel and AQA.
Yeah,
I know them both very, very well. They are more or less identical in terms of the English literature. The English language vary a little bit, but they are very, very similar. Again, extract based or an essay. But you do have to do the full text. So you've got the pre-1900 novel. You've got what we call a modern text. So that could be a drama or another novel. poetry, Shakespeare. It's heavy. It is dense. And I'd say, personally, as both a parent and a teacher, if I had the option, because you still have to read whole text for the IGCSE, I would probably go for something that offers a lighter touch for the GCSE, unless you've got somebody who really, you know, and even within the text choices that you've got at IGCSE, if you wanted to read something that was older, that they, you know, that is possible. It's just, it depends on time, and to have sort of four, they're big weighty exams as well. There's two exams for the domestic GCSE. And so it can sometimes take up a lot of time to do that with a tutor over, you know, over a couple of years. I mean, in schools, even though obviously it's very, very different, they've got like 30 students in a lesson, but they'll have four lessons a week of English. And obviously they have to teach them the language as well. But a lot of them, you know, it's tricky to get through all the content in that time. So I think sometimes it's about pragmatics, isn't it, when you're home educating, as well as trying to pick something that they like.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly sounds like some of the texts are, like, in inverted commas, heavy. So what are the options of these pre-19th century texts? No, wait, pre-1900s texts, right? Not 19th century texts.
I mean, most do A Christmas Carol because it is the least heavy.
It's the shortest.
So that's probably one of the most popular and common ones. They're the ones that I get the most, you know, sort of when I'm tutoring, it's mostly A Christmas Carol. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is another one, which I actually prefer because I think it's got a little bit more in it. But then you've got some of the other ones like Great Expectations, if they want to do it. There are some more weighty ones in there. It's just that schools and colleges tend to pick the ones that have either been taught before. Christmas Carol's been on the syllabus in some form or another for years, either at Key Stage 3 or Key Stage 4. So schools are well set up to use it, and there's lots of resources online. So again, it's that pragmatism, isn't it, versus picking something that they like. So it does depend on what they want to do. And again, there's lists online of you know, sort of the half a dozen texts that they can pick. But they are all pre-1914. And so they, you know, it's entirely up to them which ones that they may want to choose. Probably because they're classics, most tutors will have read them and know them. But obviously, if you wanted to do any independent study as well and find things online, you're better off going for the ones that, you know, basically that are, there's a shower of resources out there.
Yeah, because I know that there's some texts that, I mean, considering my children have never done English literature, I still know that schools do Macbeth, that schools do A Journey's End. You know, I know they do these things because I just come across the resources everywhere. And like for some of these texts, there's just like YouTube channels galore just based on these texts, aren't they? So you mentioned that the GCSE is two exams. I'm taking my residual knowledge on this. There is no coursework for any of this, right? So all of these exams are open to home educators.
They are. There's no coursework. It's not like I know that the English language can be a little bit tricky with the AQA and EdExcel because of the spoken element, and which is why it kind of pushes a lot of into the IGCSE, but that's not the case. There's no coursework. So it actually, I don't know if it makes it easier or harder, it broadens the choice for, you know, for parents wanting to do that. You can go through, again, the four main exam boards, domestic, you can do the IGCSE. It would then just depend on preference, time, you know, the pragmatics, like preference, time, you know, what a student wants to actually study, how much they want to do, versus obviously their other subjects. So those are sort of still, you know, questions that you'd ask of any subject, really.
It sounds to me, and I know that part of my role as running the podcast is to kind of disseminate lots of information down into one sentence, which means that it ends up, I really oversimplify, but I'm going to give it a bash, right? But it sounds to me like you're saying that the IGCSE has more choice and is more modern and is more global. However, the GCSE maybe has more resources or possibly more online stuff, and if a student particularly likes particular text or particular Shakespeare plays, that then irrespective of whether it's GCSE or IGCSE, that would be a good punt because they're really engaged with the text, right? But if they didn't have particular texts, the IGCSE, either the EdExcel or the Cambridge, but I think possibly the Cambridge it seems to be like a quite a nice, straightforward, slightly more simple, slightly more modern one.
Absolutely right. It's a lot more dense. They expect a lot more from the exams of the domestic GCSE. And as I've said, the texts are a little bit, as I said, pale, male and stale in terms of relevance to what young people enjoy. But obviously, Shakespeare's not going anywhere on any literature syllabus for obvious reasons. But certainly then there's a bit more choice. The poems generally are really good across all of them. They tend to be in a cluster, so they're thematic. And the prose text and the IGCSE just tend to have a little bit more resonance, more modern. But again, it will depend on what the preference of a particular student. I've taught students that love the classics, and that's what they want to do at Great Expectations, which for me is catnip because I love it. But it will depend on the student. But you kind of disseminated it really well. More modern, more global choices, a little bit more of a not an easy route through the literature, but more options with the kind of questions that they ask. The domestic GCSE, there's more in it. It's a bit more rigorous. And again, that will tie in with being able to access more things perhaps online to help with the self-study element. So I think it's a very different choice to make. And I think pragmatics have to come into it because you want to try and get the best result for the student with the best, you know, in almost the easiest way possible, as well as challenging them. So, That's kind of my main ideas, really.
And I'm guessing that the IGCSEs are also two exams per subject. And so there's nothing like it, because with the English language EdXL, there's, I think, Spec B or Spec A, I can't remember, has 1 3-hour exam, but there's nothing like that for English Lit.
Not as far as I know. I don't know if there are plans for that to happen. Again, that's something, again, a good collective spread of looking at syllabuses would help you. But generally, because you have to write essays, it's not like a short question, like language analysis questions, structure questions, like with the English language. You can't really fire through things quickly to get a lot of skills. It's, you've got to write an essay on this. You have to write an essay on this. So it's really difficult to condense that into something like you can with the language.
So let's talk about the essays then. Just briefly, if you could give us some idea of your main tips for how to approach, it sounds like pretty much all of the exam boards and everything, you need to be able to format and write a decent essay. So are there any sort of main top tips you would give to our parents who might be wanting to help their child build up their essay skills?
Certainly reading other essays, if there are essays, and you can sometimes get these online as well, YouTube do them, where you've got teachers, if you like, or examiners go through an essay, and it's dull, obviously, it's not exciting, but they might have like a 10-15 minute breakdown of why an essay is a grade 8 or a grade 9. And then they work out what skills are in there, why it's been worked well. And there's plenty online of how to structure and write good essays. And that will probably be, that's a really good thing that parents can do, is to sort of find, you know, what does a grade 7 or a grade 8 essay look like? Can I see how that's broken down? Somebody goes through it with you. That works. Sometimes tutors like myself have things online that they do where they can like sort of take almost like self-paced courses students can take themselves through things. So I think you're more likely to find that wider range of essay writing skills if, again, you pragmatically pick a text that's going to have these things on YouTube that you can either get for free or that you can buy courses. And certainly, I think if you've got a good tutor as well, they should have a bank of essays that they can either share with students. And certainly I do. I make sure that we break down certain skills, why one particular part of an essay is better than the other, and we break down the skills with that. So I think it's getting the right text choice to help you do that. But if they're, for example, doing history, there's lots of crossover between writing big history responses and English. So there's things with that. But I definitely think that picking something that has something online that can help you with for parents, but also making sure that tutors can support parents with what to look for as well. If they've got the right tutor, that'd be helpful.
You mentioned history, and I know that for history, it's very much the format that you make a point, then you provide evidence for the point, and then you explain how the point that you've made answers the question. And then you maybe link to your next one and so on and so forth, paragraph after paragraph. Is it the same that with English you would, for example, if the question was, Lady Macbeth was a victim, for example, I'm just making this up. Sounds a good question, actually. Lady Macbeth was as much a victim as Banquo. Okay. And then so it might be like, okay, your point is, yes, she was, because she obviously had a mental health disorder. And then you might be like, here is the quotation as the evidence. And then you might say, and obviously this makes her more of a victim, actually, because Banquo was a male, and in those days he would have had more power. And then that might link you to your next answer. Is that the kind of thing you're looking at?
Million miles away, absolutely. I mean, the key thing, and I've been an examiner for literature in the past as well, is an argument, getting your argument right. So making sure that, say, you've got a question about Lady Macbeth, stacking up your different opinions of it and making them clear and having a solid argument that runs all the way through. Obviously, within that as well, when you the difference between that kind of paragraph structure that you said in history is that there is an element of particular language analysis. So you might use a bit of evidence, like a line from the play, but then you'd have to unpick maybe some of the literature writing devices that might have been used to help you make that point about the character or theme. You probably have to put in a little bit of context about how is that, as you said there, a little bit about men and women having different expectations of them. And then you move through the essay like that. There's a five-part structure to an essay, an introduction, three main body paragraphs, and a conclusion. And that's the same for arts essays, like English, as well as social science essays. So it's just making sure that you know sort of the ingredients of what goes into each of those five segments for success. And obviously, again, a good tutor would be able to break that down with scaffolds and with examples, like I said, to help. And again, parents can do the rest, looking online, finding things to help students, if that, you know, their children, if they want to do that.
Yeah, okay, that's perfect. So that leads me on to my last question, which is about online resources. So are there any YouTube channels or websites or anything that you think could help a child who's self-studying English?
It's a good question, because there aren't enough that do like asynchronous self-study. There are things online on YouTube, particularly, like, say, if you put in, for example, the role of Banquo in Macbeth, there will be lots of YouTube videos about who he is and what he does. They will probably give you something like key extracts about him and track his character until he's killed. Sorry, plot spoiler
Oh damn, I'm not going to read it now.
the short answer is there isn't enough sort of courses, if you like. So if you want to do Macbeth, here's a 12-week sort of asynchronous course. You can come in and do this, and you can sort of then send something off to somebody to have a look at. And there should be. I'm talking myself into doing one. But not so much like that. But a lot of it would be YouTube. If it were me and I was going into something new to teach, I probably wouldn't use YouTube as much, because I'm a teacher. But I think for students, it's a really good stop for them, because the teachers have presented something in a way that is short, for sort of 10, 15 minutes at a time, that they can watch. And even I think a lot of it would be depending on what they type into the search. So they could look at, you know, sort of Act One Macbeth, or Act One, you know, Scene One, and you could track it sort of through that way, and you could find things to help you. But that would be a little bit about going, finding something there. The only resources that exist completely, really, are those sort of things that you can buy. You can still buy sort of electronic versions of, like, the CGP books that a lot of parents like, or the York Notes. They take you through things online, as well as obviously in a book. The York Notes are probably the most academic out of the you know, than CGP, but CGP break it down as well quite clearly. So it depends on what level your child is working at, but they're still really stock ones that a lot of students, certainly doing domestic GCSE, still buy. And then they'll probably look at YouTube as well. But it's, yeah, we do probably need some sort of teach yourself GCSE, get yourself through Macbeth in 12 weeks or something would be probably great for some parents.
And I'm guessing that the usual websites like TES Resources and Teachers Pay Teachers are pretty good for some free stuff, but also some like reasonably cheap PDFs and I know they have a lot of sample questions and answers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they are. The only problem with that is that sometimes you, unless you're a teacher, you've got it and you don't quite know how to interpret it and what to do with it, which is why the videos are better. Certainly Twinkle breaks a lot of things down. They've got some great Key Stage 4 resources, and actually they've got what's now Beyond, which is advanced resources. So depending on the level that a child is working at, they can always dip in and out of that if they've got like a Twinkle sort of subscription, because a lot of them are, sometimes the lessons are made or their worksheets are quite clear. So that's quite good. Teachers Pay Teachers might, you know, will have some good things on there. Also, bizarrely, Twitter has a great educational community that constantly sort of share resources on Twitter. So, you know, that's sometimes where people share and comment on each other's resources. That's the domestic teachers mostly. But obviously they can be adapted. There's certainly, what was I seeing the other day? It was a revision grid for some poems. So things like that, particularly obviously at this time of year with exams. So yeah, Twitter is a bit of an untouched area to find resources that teachers share.
Wow, that is the first time in like nearly 2 years of doing this podcast that somebody has recommended Twitter. So well done. That's like a first. You get some sort of trophy for that.
The right hashtags to follow, because obviously as an educator, I've got a network of lots of other educators that are in my kind of little, I suppose, echo chamber, if you like. So it's sort of looking at, you know, you'll be able to find your way down a little education wormhole, and then it might start bringing up educators that are sharing resources. So yeah, just another avenue.
Fabulous. And for those people listening who might like to get in touch with you, Andrea, or just see a bit more about what you do, could you share your website links and social media links with us?
Yeah, the main way is I get a lot of my inquiries actually is through Facebook, Hope Tuition Clinic. So it's not very obscure. You should be able to find me. Same on Instagram, Hope_tuition clinic. So, and obviously I'm on LinkedIn as well. Website under construction at the minute. When you're a one-man band, everything sort of seems to get done in pieces. But certainly there are plenty of resources and reviews on Facebook, probably mostly because that's where most of my parent audience is. But I'm happy, and obviously you can contact me at hopetuitionclinic@gmail.com. Again, another easy one to remember. And I'd quite happily help parents out. Ask me any questions about IGCSE. If I've got any resources, I can certainly help you with those. So yes, I'm, you know, here to help. If, you know, because it's quite a shot in the dark as an English teacher. If for me, if it were maths, and it was if I was home educating, I would really feel a little bit all at sea. So I am happy to help anybody who wants to ask any questions.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. And Andrea is on our Facebook group and is also happy to answer questions on our Facebook page as well. So thank you so much, Andrea, for coming on and guiding us through what seems to be, you know, choices everywhere. I'm so sorry, I'm drifting into bad poetry puns. But I mean, it certainly sounds like there's like a huge amount of choice for English Lit, and it's all sounds very much like it's, there is no shortcut for having a look and seeing what texts your child might prefer. So thank you so much for guiding us through that.
Okay, and obviously if people have any questions about texts, or, you know, sort of whether they think this would be suitable or what the resources are like, and they do want to sort of shortcut, as you say, in any way, they can always contact me, because I can always then give them quick potted ideas about certain things, you know, sort of screenshots of things and things like that might help them if they, you know, if they feel a little bit overwhelmed.
That sounds perfect. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's Home Education Matters podcast. See you at the next one. Have a lovely day.